Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
One Last Time. That's Indiana's own John Mellencamp. Hurt So Good. A final shout out to the People's Champions. The Indiana Pacers for putting up a good fight.
Yeah, they sure did. It did feel like we were all robbed. Of course, tough for Tyrese Halliburton as he goes down with the Achilles. Your thoughts on all of that?
I mean, the Pacers, man, just kept exceeding expectations. I thought the series was over. Lost game 4 at home.
Yeah.
And it was in the sense that they lost the series, but I didn't think they would get into a competitive game 7 from that point. And do they win that game if Halliburton doesn't get hurt? Probably not.
Maybe.
But maybe, you know, like you can see it. Maybe they do. And so for them to put up the fight they did, I mean, they're on the road against that just hellacious Thunder defense. And that crowd, and the Thunder are more talented top to bottom anyway, and then the Halliburton injury. I just think they put up a great fight, and I appreciate the Indiana Pacers this season. I will remember the Indiana Pacers more than the Thunder when I think about this season.
Yeah, it's interesting. On the show that precedes ours, they were having the discussion. Someone asked, why don't I like the Thunder? Like, not that they dislike the Thunder, but that people feel, whatever, I do think,
and that's not even a Memphis show.
They didn't even get into the matching T-shirts, Chris. Shockingly,
right?
But I don't think. Maybe do you think it's just we don't know them well enough? Like people in the end, it's personalities and storylines and stuff like that that people attach to. Or do you think it's the way they play? Or why? I don't think there's any great affection across the land for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
No, it's interesting. I think different people have different reasons. Like Memphis, we have our own reasons, right? Like, there's history there with the previous battles, and there's the contrast in, like, the cities and the fan bases, and they had it easy, and there's all of that. Like, there's all kinds of, like, the Memphis is good at resentment, and there's all kinds of good reasons to resent the Oklahoma City Thunder. And actually, like, different things. There's just one guy I follow. And he's an agent, or I don't even know what his deal is. He's like an NBA Twitter personality, and like he's just constantly ragging on the Thunder about how they were going to be the corniest champions in NBA history, and please Indiana spare us this, you know. And like it's like Shea and Chet and Jalen Williams are really corny and annoying in all their TV commercials, and Chet as the white guy who, like, you know, the guy I was following with was cracking, like, Chet's going to start using a patois in the post game. interviews, and we please spare us all of this. And, you know, there's some people resent the fact that, like, you know, the oil guys or natural gas, whatever, ripped them out of Seattle and brought them to Oklahoma.
I think Chris is driving, and we may have lost Chris. We'll endeavor to get Chris back. I don't sense any great affection for the Thunder out there, quite apart from all the reasons that Memphians have to not be bewitched by the Thunder, some of which are, resentment. Some of which are just resentment. I do think that if you think about it clearly, the Thunder should give you, as a Memphian, reason to hope, or any small market team.
I'm driving.
Sorry, Chris. So, it's funny.
Yeah, I am currently, this is the way the timing always works on these days. I'm on my way to Memphis, so I'm probably driving through the middle of nowhere, Iowa.
Oh, you're coming to the draft. You're coming to the draft. Would you have come, by the way, if but for the trade? Were you coming anyway?
I was, because I needed to show my – I felt like I needed to show my face at some point during the summer. I also need to, like, see my mother and everything.
Right.
And so it was a good timing for that regardless. But I'm glad they got the pick, and now that it feels more – even more purposeful.
Yeah. Wrapping up on the Thunder a little bit, I saw someone – someone was saying this could be, like, the Spurs 5 and 15 years. I'm just not even – the times have changed
so
dramatically
hard,
that 5 and 15, I honestly think – 2 and 5 might be reasonable or something like that. But 5 and 15, who the hell knows?
Everybody thought that way about the Celtics a year ago. You know, and so it's just so hard. This team is obviously set up to be really, really good for a long time if they can keep that core together and they stay healthy. They are extremely well set up, and they will be the favorites to win going into next season. But it's so hard. And it takes such a toll on teams when you go through 4 rounds of the playoffs. And the NBA is harder now than it used to be. A lot of people don't want to think that way because they think it's soft and the guys aren't tough or whatever. But we're seeing, I think, these injuries we're seeing, like with Tatum and the Halliburton and the Lillard, they're all like examples of that. It's just the league is harder now on players. It's harder on bodies. And there's so much additional wear and tear to go through 4 rounds of playoffs, man. I mean, getting one is an achievement. People shouldn't scoff at one.
Right. The Pacers themselves have had 3 Achilles, including James Wiseman, this year. Like, it's kind of amazing. So, it's funny. I don't think, like, the Thunder, if you look at their path, they didn't have to play healthy Ja Morant. They didn't have to play a healthy Aaron Gordon. They didn't have to play healthy Steph. They didn't have to play, like, you can go through it and hear. But that is going to be the way it is for the NBA champion, ultimately, most years. Don't you think there will be – you'll be able to point to teams.
I mean, yeah. Quiet as is kept, that was how the Grizzlies got to a conference finals the one time they ever did so.
Right.
You know, it was the same thing. It was Russell Westbrook was out and Blake Griffin was banged up. And, like, that's just sort of the way it goes. There is an element of attrition in the NBA playoffs.
In David Stern's 30 years, there were 8 champions – in Adam Silver's 12 years, there have been 9 champions and 7 in 7. Is this good?
It is to me. I accept there's a reasonable counter argument to make that, like, casual fans like the star teams and the consistent rivalries. So I don't know. Maybe it's not good. For me, as an NBA fan, it is good. I mean, I like the variety. I like the sense of possibility. And so whether it's ultimately good or not, I think that's up for debate. I personally like it.
And then for the Pacers, now they've got Halliburton will be out, you know, whatever, maybe all of next year or most of next year. And in the East generally, if you're the Knicks or honestly the Cavs, you look around and you think, well, the Celtics are done. The Pacers are done. Like, it's all opened up. You actually wonder if it would have made more sense for an Eastern team to make a push for KD, given how wide open it is apparently now. Doesn't it? I mean, the East is there for the taking.
I think, and frankly, it's so open that, like, even honestly, like, the thing about the Celtics, apparently they just may want to, like, get out of the tax for all kinds of reasons. But honestly, if they just rolled back what they had without Tatum and, like, added some depth,
right,
like, who knows, right? But I do think on paper, I think Cleveland, New York, and now Orlando are probably the strongest teams on paper going into next season. And I really think people have been too dismissive of Cleveland based on, like, losing a playoff series. One, they were really banged up. And then two, that Pacers team, like, now that we've seen what they've done, they went on and beat the Knicks. They take the Thunder to 7, like, maybe it was no shame losing to that Pacers team in the playoffs. I think the Cavs, to me, are the favorites in the East going into next season.
How about Orlando, though? What do you think of Orlando now with Dez?
I think they were a good team last year, even with a lot of injuries. And now, if you add Dez and Bay, and if you assume, you never know with injuries, but you assume odds are better health than a year ago, I think that team, again, I think that's a top 3 team on paper probably going into next season. I think it's probably 3rd, you know, maybe behind the Cavs and Knicks, but why not? Why not Orlando, you know?
KD to Houston, your thoughts?
It's a really good deal for Houston. they were already, I'm surprised they didn't, that Jabari Smith, they kept him out of the deal.
Right.
Because frankly, like, they're getting to the point where they're going to have to start paying these dudes, and like, they can't pay everybody. And so Jalen Green, they signed him for the purpose of trading him. Right. And like, there you go, it worked. Dylan Brooks is good, and they'll miss him, but they had Tari Eason ready to take that spot. They have Amen Thompson there.
Yep.
And so Houston, like, gets, like, vastly improves their, like, go-to scoring option from Jalen Green to Kevin Durant. Like, a supersonic-level improvement there right. if Durant is healthy. And, like, they got plenty of perimeter defenders to step into Dylan Brooks' spot. And, like, the 10th pick is nice, but they're so deep with young players, who knows if that guy was even going to play for them.
Right.
So I think I mean, it was
Reed
a great trade.
Reed Shepard and Cam Whitmore, neither one can basically get right. on the floor, you know?
So I think it's a great trade for Houston. Like, it gives them an upside, but there's not much risk to it. And we'll see what kind of extension they give Durant and what the ripple effects of that are. If they're going to pay him $60 million a year for two more years and that keeps them from re-signing somebody, then maybe there are some ripple effects. But for next season, like, it's all upside and, to me, no downside, which is hard to say with Kevin Durant because he tends to bring some downside with him. But I think for this situation, like, there's not a lot of downside to it. In Phoenix, like, I guess it's the best they could get, right? But it's not great. And, like, you know, it's interesting from a Grizzlies perspective because on one hand, you're like, team in your division you're trying to compete with got better. On the other hand, you're probably going to get that Phoenix pick.
And like, right. That's and next like, year's
that
pick,
helps,
right?
Man. Yes, that could be like, they could end up getting like the fifth or sixth pick in the draft. In theory, they could get the second pick in the draft, but let's not get greedy. Like, it looks like there's a good chance you get the fifth, sixth, seventh pick in the draft out of that.
So they now have, at the two, they've got Booker, Beal, Jalen Green, Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal, Cody Martin, and whatever you call Dylan, we'll call him a three. So I guess that means
Royce O'Neal's not a two. He's more of a four, three, four. But I take your point. Like, the four, it may be that the four best players on that team are all scoring guards.
So are you interested in a slightly used Grayson Allen or Royce O'Neal? Like, they're going to have to make more trades to balance that roster, I presume.
I think Royce O'Neal would be a useful player for the Grizzlies. His contract is too big to fit to your room exception, and if you do a Cole Anthony deal for him, that sort of makes sense for Phoenix positionally, but they add salary. I don't know if they're doing that. Plus, I'm trying to shop for better with the Cole Anthony salary than Royce O'Neal. And Grayson Allen is, I mean, you do have Desmond Bane is out, gone, but I think they want to play Jalen Wells at the two more. Yeah. They would rather play Jalen Wells at the two than trade for somebody like Grayson Allen, you know, so I don't really see that.
You have to assume that that's just like, this is not the Dallas who did not shop Doncic to anybody but the Lakers. It was well known that they were trading KD, and this is literally the best that they got, you know?
Maybe they could have gotten better from Minnesota if Kevin Durant was willing to go to Minnesota, but
right.
The Wolves were not going to trade for Kevin Durant against his will. And so that took Minnesota effectively out of it. So among the teams Durant was willing to go to, that limited them really to that. And, like, apparently Miami just didn't want to give them anything, and neither did San Antonio, really.
So you're headed here. It'll obviously be an interesting, I mean, it certainly sets up to be an interesting draft for the Grizzlies, whether they make the pick or not. Do you think if something happens, it'll happen draft night? Obviously, some of these things have to actually formally happen later, but we'll hear about it draft night. Is there, when you look back at the history, has any of this stuff happened before the draft, or is it mostly?
The Marcus Smart trade happened, I think, the day before the draft.
Oh, yeah.
And I also think the trade up for what ended up being the Zaire Williams thing also happened before the draft, which was unusual because usually, you know, like, that waits for the draft. But that was a tell that, like, they weren't, it wasn't dependent on any individual player, right? So actually,
that's right.
Kleiman does have a history of making these deals before the draft. I think we're at the point now where the floodgates are sort of open. We've had the Desmond Bane and the Kevin Durant thing. And the key thing on this, and I remind this of the people occasionally, there's a difference between something being reported and something processing.
Right.
And so like this Kevin Durant trade, which everyone knows about, and everyone's done their podcast about, and we just talked about, it hasn't technically happened, and it won't technically happen for another week. And so, like, the Desmond Bane thing has technically happened. Like, teams will process things when they need to process things based on how they need to work the NBA rules. And so stuff can come out that can be processed. Stuff will be reported that will process before the calendar flips, and stuff will be reported that will process after. None of that matters relative to it being agreed to and reported, right?
Right.
And so things may come out between now and the draft, even if they're not going to process for another 2 weeks.
Okay. So of the various, let's see, they could stay and make the pick. They could trade down, which would likely to be get off John Conchar's salary. They could trade up, because it looks to me like the wings who seem most appealing to the Grizzlies don't feel like they'll get to them at 16, or they could trade out entirely, right? Those are the four choices.
I'm gonna write a draft piece probably. Life didn't let me do it over the weekend, and now I'm driving today, but I'll have something up mid-morning tomorrow probably going through all that, but yeah.
Okay. Rank them in terms of most likelihood.
I mean, the most likely individually is always that you just pick 16. You don't have to do anything. It's right there, right? I would not take that against the field.
I see.
If you made it strictly a use the pick at 16 or something else happens, I would may lean towards the something else. But among the four, the highest probability is just picking at 16. I got to think moving down is the second most likely, even though the Grizzlies don't have a history of doing that, just because of the incentives to move the money for the Jaren part. And then I'm going to say moving out is third, because you have that Anthony contract to pair with it, and that's an they're very well set up to shop that combo, right? Cole Anthony in the 16. And even though the Grizzlies have a history of moving up, I'm going to put that fourth just because you would have to really believe in what you want to pair a first round pick with 16 to move up like three spots.
All right. There's Chris. Let's let him go. I think geography has spoken. Oh, you're back.
I'm back. You didn't hear any of that?
We lost you. I think we just missed the end of that. You'd have to really. You were talking about why it is.
You'd have to really believe in the guy you're moving up for to include, like, basically do two first round picks to move up two or three spots. You know, which is probably what we're talking about.
Kevin Pelton had a deal. I don't know if you saw it. I think he had a mock draft, and in the deal, I don't have it in front of me. It was KCP. Going to Brooklyn,
the Cam Johnson thing.
Yeah, the Cam Johnson thing.
I don't think. And actually, the Nate Duncan podcast mock offseason also did a similar trade for the Grizzlies.
Tell the people what it is first. Basically, the gist of it before you explain why.
It's basically Cam Johnson. I'm sorry. It's basically Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, the 16 and a future pick for Cam Johnson, then turns them all to clear the salary and. Maybe two future picks and some constructions. There's a logic to that. I mean, you get the best player in the deal in Cam Johnson and you clear the salary. But I don't think they're going to get – if they valued Cam Johnson at two first-round picks plus a decent player, which is, I think, what they see KCP as, they would have done that a year ago. And so I just don't – I think people are misreading Grizzlies, the level of Grizzlies' interest in Cam Johnson. I think it's never been as high as people think it is.
Right. All right, we will we'll talk to you about particular players tomorrow. Have a safe trip, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Arrington from the Daily Memphian. In terms, Jeffrey, in terms of just satisfying.
Yeah.
What is the most satisfying and what would be the least satisfying of the various things they could do Wednesday?
I suppose, cuz I was thinking about, would I be satisfied if they moved up? Because on the one hand,
if they gave up a first, let's say they gave up a future first.
Right.
Not Phoenix's next year, but they gave up a future first to move up to grab one of these wings.
Correct. So how satisfying is that?
Would you be outraged? Would you feel good about it? How would you feel?
I think I would be conflicted, right? Because
would you rather they do that or stay put and pick a wing at 16?
So, like, that's what I was trying to weigh in my head, because on the one hand, you've said we've gotten unintentionally younger, and you'd be wondering, well, is this another example of the same set of circumstances developing where, well, this is what we've got. We've got to, because I do agree with Chris. If you have a chance to draft a good player, like you shouldn't just be, you know, you shouldn't just be stubborn and opposed to it. But I don't think I'd be that thrilled. Like, I'm not going to come in on Thursday and just say, like, let's light the world on fire. But I don't think you would be pumped about it. Now, granted, to your point, I think a lot of it would have to do with which player do they end up
drafting. Let's say you move up and get Carter Bryant, okay? And you give up a first, another first, to go up and get Carter Bryant, who's supposedly the you know, your classic 3-and-D. As opposed to staying at 16 and drafting Neek Clifford at 16.
I think I would be more excited about the move up because you at least have the possibility of, okay, well, what if this is the one they hit on?
Or Cedric Coward. Let's say they go up and get Cedric Coward.
One of my buddies in the group chat is
it's easy to fall in love with Cedric. He's the one who's captivated me because he's kind of a black box. You can imagine he got hurt last year. He played at Eastern Washington before that. He was tremendous, evidently, at the combine. Like, he's one of these guys. Maybe in some ways, like, he was much better than Zaire. Zaire had no college track record.
Right.
But there you could imagine Zaire being anything you wanted him to be because there was literally whatever. He'd never really seen him play. And then at Stanford, it had been during COVID and whatever else. So
there were
just like
circumstances.
He could be great.
Right.
And now, again, much better track record for said Coward. He's the one who's captivated me. I would prefer them. I would be more excited about them having a conviction and going up and getting. Now, mind you, they've had that before. They had a conviction about Jake LaRavia, right? I don't know that they had a,
I think they had a conviction about Brandon.
They had a conviction about Brandon. They had
conviction about Dez.
Right. Did they have a conviction about Zaire? They didn't go up to get Zaire
knowing he was on the board at that moment.
They did it before. But I think that he was among the cluster of players that they had a conviction in. But it's a little different saying that.
Yeah, I think he was the lower end of the cluster, but I do think he was included.
So they've had a conviction before, though, about Jake.
Sure.
And they were just wrong. Not wrong. I mean, he's a good player. He's a decent player. But he was not what they wanted him to be, or they wouldn't have let him walk. Right?
Correct.
Very clearly. And so it doesn't mean that a conviction, they're 100% correct when they've had a conviction. But I do, it's just historically, I like it when my front office has a conviction and they go up and they get someone rather than seeing who drifts to them. And so I think I would be more excited I'd be more excited about them doing that than staying put. The one that would have me, I would find least satisfying, but maybe very sensible, would be trading down to get rid of John Conchar's salary in order to free up more money to sign Jaren. There is going to be nothing. It will be logical. It will be eating your vegetables. But it's going to be like eating broccoli. It is nothing going to be sexy about trading down to get rid of John Conchar's salary.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it, though. If they did that, I think on Thursday, I would... And maybe I would be in the minority. I think that's entirely possible. But I would kind of be in the... I think I'd be more interested in that. Because it's almost like if they pick at 16, it was like they... We know they were trying to do something, and they couldn't do it.
And they couldn't do it.
And so you wind up just kind of...
Because we don't believe they traded for that pick in order to make it.
Correct. So I think I would actually talk myself into trading down and then seeing what comes next with all of that.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't.
But it's not exciting from a draft perspective. I acknowledge that, and I'm not even trying to spin zone that.
All right, we got more to talk about. Ed Scott on Friday talked to the assembled media, and we will talk to him about it was about revenue sharing. It was about the stadium, about all kinds of things. So we'll talk about that when we return. Before, I will tell you that if you are thinking about taking an instant cash offer from your home, you're probably besieged by robocalls, strangers. Hey, are you thinking about selling your home? If you are, the truth of the matter is, feels kind of skeevy the way that it's done with the robocalls, but it's not actually totally irrational to take an instant cash offer for your home because you don't have to go through the rigmarole of, you know, spending $10,000 or something to fix it up and then keeping it pristine and clear and having showings and suspense as you try to sell the darn thing. You take the offer and you're done. If you do it, though, do it with Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams. Don't do it with some stranger. Call Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams, and he'll come out and he will look around and he will say, don't take one of those other offers because they're lowballing you. I will give you a full price offer for your home. Not only that, up to 4 months to move. So it's easy, makes it incredibly simple. It is certainly a sensible way to sell your home. But again, not if you're going with one of those unsolicited offers, only if you use Josh Hysaw. Saves you a lot of stress, saves you a lot of time, saves you a lot of anxiety. It's Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. You can go to joshhasthebuyers.com. Again, on the web at joshhasthebuyers.com. It's Monday on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Well, I got good news, and the good news is the semi-annual sale at Oak Hall is underway. Sizzling summer savings throughout the store, men's and women's, tailored clothing, sports shirts, just short, like everything throughout the store, store-wide. It is the, and Jeffrey, it's so early in summer. It barely got to be summer, and so you can get in there and get outfitted for summer. We've just become summer. And with massive savings at Oak Hall. I have a confession. I was actually, when I was in Colorado, Jeffrey, I left a pair of shorts from Peter Millar. I realized, oh, no, to my horror, I left them at a Airbnb where I was staying. I got to get back in there at a semi-annual sale. That's the thing. Perks up my spirits. I can get in there and get a good deal on the beautiful, comfortable, breezy, stylish Peter Millar shorts that I was wearing as well. And I will see you there because it is underway. The semi-annual sale. Kind of hard to believe. You can outfit yourself for summer with still so much of summer remaining. We're barely underway. And the semi-annual sale is there. So get in there this week for the best selection and the tremendous savings. All right, Jeffrey. So much has happened. And honestly, it's going to be a busy week because we got the draft this week. How about that? How about Zach Kleiman? Thanks to Zach Kleiman for doing what he did. That was a good deed. But Ed Scott spoke Friday about Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium.
Yep.
Is what the ostensible reason for the meeting was, and really, what was interesting about the stadium. And the truth of the matter is, you could see it, by the way. If you go to their website or you go to the Daily Memphian, whatever, they basically just took you through what's going to happen on every floor. You know, the first floor is going to look like this. The second floor is going to look like this. The third floor is going to look like this. And they're continuing. Obviously, it's not going to be done for this year, but it will be done. It's on schedule for the next year. They've raised most of the money that they have to raise. They still have more to raise, but they've raised most of the money that they're going to raise. I mean, it looks pretty spectacular, I got to tell you. Like, it is, it's been a bit of a dump. Hey, can we say that, Jeffrey?
Great sight lines.
Great sight lines. And it, honestly, it looks good in silhouette, too. And Tiger Lane is a magnificent tailgating facility. But it's just kind of cool. There's a lot of things that are cool about it. I think the biggest roll of the dice, well, there's two things that emerge to me as a roll of the dice. One is, it's just kind of amazing that they took this, and again, I have no idea how this is going to turn out, but that they took this prime geography, you know, and turned it into a party plaza.
Yep.
Because that's not typically the party plaza is like, well, we got these end zone seats. We don't have anything to do with these. No one wants to sit here. Let's make this a party plaza, right? And instead, right there along the 50, on the Memphis side of the stadium, they're going to have rows of seats underneath the plaza, and then you have suites above the plaza, but they're going to have a party plaza. And the Party Plaza, by the way, you can, it's for people who already have tickets. You don't buy tickets to the Party right. Plaza. You can go for your club seats, and then you can, if you're in a different place in the stadium, one of the things that Ed said was you can buy up buy. So whatever, if your seat wouldn't entitle you necessarily to go to the Party Plaza, you can pay some extra money and you can go to the Party Plaza, right? But it's just kind of, because normally, whatever, you look at Michigan Stadium, and there's a, that's what I would be looking, of course, the greatest fight song in the land, and you would see a wall of people along, like banked wall of people along the home side. And here, it's going to be a wall of people, but it's going to be a Party Plaza. Isn't that, it's an interesting, it's, yeah, an, UCF it's an interesting has, phenomenon.
UCF has done this.
Yep, that's true.
But yeah, to your point, you do not typically see it in between the 30s or the 20s.
Right. That's what it's just like, again, could be magnificent, could turn out to be an inspiration. People gather in there, having a high old time. I'll just be interested in seeing how it, and listen, this is going to be a massive improvement. The suites before were a joke. Honestly, they're on the other side. They're way the hell up in the air, and they're not that great.
Yeah,
and so now you're going to have really truly lovely suites and premium seating and whatnot, and that's where they make the money. But that's the other thing that was really struck me was there's lots of things they talked about. Now they're going to have a kitchen. They didn't have a kitchen before. They had to truck in all the food. Yep. Whatever. There's lots of interesting things that they talked about. But I asked Ed. I said, so have you projected, is owning this stadium, there's going to be a lot of costs associated with it. Are you going to make more in revenue because you own the stadium and you have control and you can sell anything you want to sell? They're going to sell the naming rights to the Party Plaza. Right, sure. Now they're calling it Party Plaza. Well, it's not going to be the Party Plaza. It's going to be the Calkins Party Plaza or right. A Calkins Plaza or something like that. Probably not Calkins unless my ship comes in the next couple of days. But so are the extra revenues they are going to generate going to be enough not only to pay the expenses that they now are responsible for, but actually make money for the university?
Right.
What do you think his answer to that was?
His answer would be he's a positive person, so absolutely.
No. No. He said for the first few years, no. And then we hope to build to where it will be ultimately generating. And that what it will hinge on is these extra events they're doing.
Concerts.
Like the Chris Brown concert. And there was a lot of talk about the tunnel. Yep. They obviously have a tunnel now, so you can stage big concerts there.
So you can have the 18-wheelers get in.
I'll be honest. If you look at the success right now that the FedEx Forum is having, drawing concerts and stuff like that, if the financial future of the University of Memphis involvement and ownership of Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium is tied to how successful they'll be to doing other events, I think this could ultimately be a money drag for them. And it's why when they did this all these years ago, I was thinking to myself, do they really want to be doing this? Why exactly? Like, why are they?
Well,
like,
you're on the hook for the losses.
Now you're running a stadium, and it's expensive to
run
a stadium.
It's also a different business.
They got it, like, it was easy for the University of Memphis when everything went wrong to point to the park commission or the city or whatever and say, look at what a scrubs they were over there. It's not our fault. It's them. But they got a great deal. Now they're responsible. Now the good news is there. They have control.
Yep.
And so you're not, and that may be the most important thing here. They have control of what happens there. They can, and no one will be more devoted and more interested in putting on a first-class operation than the University of Memphis, right? And so they have control. They have incentives. So maybe what it will do is result in a much better facility. Like we would talk about how the windows are just
needing a power washing.
Just needing a freaking power wash. And so maybe because the incentives and the ownership now align, they're all in the same place, it'll be a much better facility. But it is not apparently going to be a financial windfall. Indeed, at one point, Ed said, yeah, well, the decision to take it on was made before I got here.
Yes.
He didn't go on and say, I wouldn't have made that decision. But if you look at what Ed had to walk into, again, I think it's pretty remarkable the job he's done. He walked into, oh, we're taking over a stadium. We're dealing with conference realignment. Penny, and this was last year, Penny's on thin ice.
Yep.
right? We got an NCAA investigation overhead, and everybody basically who works in the athletic department has cleared out.
Yes.
Here, Ed, take over. I think given that, and again, I don't think Ed is directly responsible for the year that the number of wins that football had, but I do think Ed was at least partially responsible for some of the progress Penny made.
Sure.
In the way that he related to his players and the community and everything else, and in just the narrative that Penny. So, and they've raised a bunch of money. They're about to, you know, set a record for the more fundraising money. Now, obviously, this was in the wake of Fred's gift. So I think it's a pretty darn successful year by Ed Scott, but I do not underestimate at all the work that had to be done and the work that will need to be done. Cause I think you could look back in 5 years and say, this was not a smart decision financially by the University of Memphis to take on this building. And there are those who will tell you that, well, Fred insisted he was only going to give the money if no, he didn't care. I can tell you that for certain. Fred just wanted to support whatever the University of Memphis thought was best. And what the University of Memphis at that point thought was best was taking over control of the stadium. If you do not believe people who will tell you that Fred insisted he wasn't going to give the money unless they had control of the stadium. I don't believe that.
No, I'm with you entirely. I mean, now you're going to see how good is the University of Memphis being in the concert business.
And that's a hell of a business to take on. They got plenty of other fish to fry.
Well, I mean, the Grizzlies are in the concert business, too.
Yeah, it's not that easy. So that was the one thing that was interesting. The second thing that was interesting is that...
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
He then did talk about NIL. Now, he did not give them the dollar figure. And unless you're spending the full $20.5 million, you wouldn't give the dollar figure. Why would you?
Right.
Right? I mean, if you're spending the $20.5, you say, yes, we're going to spend every penny. But beyond that, it is not advantageous for Tulane or South Florida to know how much money Memphis is spending. Right?
Sure.
It just doesn't. I totally get we're not going to tell you the number.
Yeah, I'm with you.
He said, again, we'll be right at the top of the group of six, or what do we call it now?
Gee, I think it's still group of five.
Group of five, whatever. We're right at the top of the non-power conferences in terms of spending. The one thing he did mention, as an avid reader of the Daily Memphian, Parth Padhyay and John Martin had done a piece back and forth where they were talking about lots of things, but among the things they talked about was this, what was NIL and revenue sharing. And in that piece, they talked about Kansas spending $4 to $5 million on basketball of their revenue sharing.
Correct.
Right. And so there, Ed Scott plucked that out and he said, I can tell you, if you're worried about us keeping up with Kansas in terms of revenue sharing, we're going to be right there. We will be plenty competitive with Kansas in terms of revenue sharing. And so that is $4 to $5 million that they're going to revenue share. Now, here's the distinction. He also said that what they want to do is encourage businesses to come through them. In other words, if you are FedEx or AutoZone
Calkins Enterprises,
or write trivia, mm-hmm. Etc.
More of a marketing firm,
a marketing firm. Then he wants you to go and strike a deal with the University of Memphis, and then the money that you pay will be used to fund the revenue sharing, or to fund scholarships or something else, right? And in some ways, that makes sense. They're going to ultimately, he said, dissolve the collectives, right? They're going to go away. The problem is that...
Depends who you talk to, but
Not only are you not spending the full 20.5, which I never would have expected him to pay. That's a massive amount of money for a place like the University of Memphis. other schools are. But Kansas may be, and we don't know how it's going to work, they may be doing the $4 to $5 million in revenue sharing and then doing a lot of NIL deals on top of that.
I would think it's almost certain.
Right? And Memphis is saying, I was clear with this, as Scott did say, yes, there will be NIL deals on top of the revenue sharing, but the emphasis for Memphis is going to be, let's have the money go through directly through the university. It'll be direct paychecks to checks to the student athletes, and we're going to try to minimize the revenue sharing and the NIL and maximize the revenue sharing. Whereas other schools might be like, we're going to do revenue sharing and we are going to lard them up and have giant NIL deals for our most promising athletes as well. That was a little vague, but isn't that the sense that you got?
My sense was if Kansas is only paying $4.5 million, they would be competitive, which honestly lines up with about what I think. I think this roster.
It's what you said 3 months ago when we first had this argument.
I just do not think that Kansas is only going to be doing
They might be doing $4 to $5 million in revenue share.
Correct.
Because of the 20.5, you got to give some to Olympic sports, but you're going to give, it's just true, bigger rosters, whatever. Most schools are going to give more to football.
Yes.
And so then you'll have maybe $4 or $5 million left. And if Memphis is giving that much, it actually means that Memphis is giving a bigger share.
Yes. To basketball.
Of its to basketball than Kansas is.
Yes.
Right? Then Kansas might be spending the full 20.5.
Right.
And they're doing 4 to 5 to basketball. Memphis is going to be spending half of that, let's say $12 million.
And he's going to be getting a bigger piece of the pie.
$4 to $5 million. Memphis basketball will be giving a bigger share relatively than Kansas basketball. But what Kansas is going to do is they're going to say, all right, we're going to be $4 to $5 million revenue sharing, and then we're going to come up with another $5 million or $7 million in NIL deals.
Yes. That is my expectation.
And what do you think that number, total ballpark for Kansas will be?
I would imagine Kansas is going to be in that $10 million range.
Total.
Yeah, 10 to 12.
Total. So the 4 to 5 and then another 5 to 7 of NIL deals.
Yes, for basketball. Yeah.
Yeah, for basketball.
Yeah.
Whereas Memphis, it might be 4 to 5 and then we'll see. But if someone comes to them with money, they're going to say, hey, we need to fund our revenue sharing.
Right.
They're not going to be saying, let's do lucrative NIL deals.
Yes.
And so they will not be keeping up with Kansas in terms of the total package that they're paying their basketball. Not that I would expect that they would be.
Right. That's my expectation.
But there was a little bit of a, you know.
Well, I think there is some logic also to wanting to say, give us the money for the revenue sharing. Because
totally. Yeah.
Well, the logic is also, If you decide to pay a player $1 million, that doesn't have to go through NIL Go.
100%. One of the differences is that the revenue sharing money does not have to go be approved by this new entity.
NIL Go,
which will determine whether it's fair market value.
Exactly.
Right? And so you don't have to go through that. You can just, the players get the money.
Right.
If you decide to give PJ Haggerty or the equivalent $2 million, you can just give them the $2 million. Whereas if it's a NIL deal, then it's got to be approved.
It's scrutinized.
So I'm not critical of it.
No.
But I don't think you should be fooled in thinking that Memphis is going to be that.
I do not think that Memphis
is going to have the same fundamental payroll
purchasing
that Bill
power.
Self is going to have. Purchasing power that Bill Self is going to have.
No, I
think that's unlikely to be the case. Jonah Dillon did have a story over at the CA about how in terms of actual revenues,
yep,
Memphis is leading the way outside of the power conferences. Nice little scoop there. And 11.5 was the number?
I'm seeing 11 million. This is from the 23-24 fiscal year. They led the way in the AAC, obviously, at 11 million. Tulane was second at 10.8. SMU was 10.4. South Florida was 10.3. That also put them number.
Which year was this? Because SMU is now in the.
This is the 23-24 season.
I see. Yeah.
Yes.
So there you go.
And I think a big reason why the AAC got lifted ahead of the other leagues is the exit fee SMU had to pay.
Other stuff we have not talked about, LSU, obviously,
yep,
2 and 3 years for LSU winning the College World Series.
They add to the Intimidator out in the outfield.
Six straight for the SEC. Did you saw the coach was ejected?
Yeah. So the home plate umpire was one of the guys that was fired by Major League Baseball, and so he is a former Major League ump. That was one of those ones.
They said they had been warned that they were arguing, been warned about arguing balls and strikes. Continued to worry, continued to
Yeah, they kept like they clearly kept going, and then the first base coach like bumps the umpire, and then the umpire kind of did a LeBron flop, so that he was going to get tossed. I just think everybody kind of handled it. Yeah, I didn't think it wasn't one of those ones where it's like, I know it's easy to bag on the umpire, but like there was like you could see like there were multiple times like knock it off,
and they why can't Joe Burrow throw a baseball?
So I'm not worried about this. I saw the video, and I know that everyone's out there. Listen, throwing a football and throwing a baseball are two different motions. Joe was clearly...
We know he can throw a football.
Correct. And Joe, like, stopped playing baseball in middle school. Like, he was throwing a hard slider. Like, he was... Like, the arm motion that he was going with was not conducive to throwing a baseball. Yes, it was a tough look, but I'm not worried yet.
Not worried.
Not worried.
What is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jeff, of course, will join them as he does on Mondays. Kevin Serino is going to join me today. Coach Hurd's on the road traveling. Jason Munn's going to join us at 2:35. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow. Stay cool. Get yourself to Oak Hall for the semi-annual sale. We got to get out of here. Our work is done.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.